Today is Tuesday, March 2nd.
Wednesday.
Oh, gosh. Today's Wednesday, March 2nd. This is Lynn Downey, and I am at the Flying E Dude Ranch with Steve and Andrea Taylor, Andrea known as Andy. And we are talking about their lives in Wickenburg, their work, and everything else about their fascinating lives. So good morning to the two of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Steve, let's start with you. Tell me a little bit about your background, where you were born, brought up, went to school, all that stuff.
I was born in Santa Barbara, California, at the Cottage Hospital on the beach. It's beautiful. It's still there. At that time, my dad was a general manager and polo player at the Santa Barbara Polo Club.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. I grew up with horses a little different than the cowboy, cowgirl area here of Arizona. So many people always ask you, when was the first time you were on a horse? I don't remember. You grew up with them. We moved to Wickenburg in 1961 to start a ranch north of town, raising and training polo ponies. My dad was still active in the polo arena. He'd played basically around the United States in Hawaii. He was on the 20 gold championship team in 1933. He was on the 20 gold and 12 gold championship team in 1956. And my mother, my brother, sister, and I followed him from mostly Santa Barbara in the winter. We played out of Santa Barbara. We played out of Riviera Club, Will Rogers Park, Palm Springs, all those on the West Coast. And then we moved to Chicago area, Oak Brook, Illinois, in the summer and played there. My dad and I and brother and people trained and raised polo ponies until probably about 1972 when my dad retired and moved to Kansas with my mom and dad. And I joined the Air Force in 1971 and went around many, many places. So basically, I spent 10 years in California, and I spent 10 years in Arizona in Wickenburg going through school, and entered the Air Force in 71, married my high school sweetheart in 72, stick around for about 4 months. I said, well, this was enough, so I went to Vietnam after that. And then I drug her around Germany, Florida, California. Stayed in Florida when I went to Alaska. And we spent 23 years in the Air Force. Andy's mom was still here, and my brother was still here in Wickenburg. So we always had strong ties coming back to Wickenburg. And I grew up with the Flying E Ranch as knowing the daughter of the owners for many years, and coming out here as a ditch day, we called it. Kids would go to Phoenix, to the zoo. Kids would go to the museums. Wendy got in front of our class and said, and this was in fourth grade, we can go out to the Flying E Ranch. My mom will cook hamburgers and hot dogs, and we can swim in the pool and play at the ranch. And fourth graders knew that answer. So I grew up at the ranch knowing that as what a dude ranch was, never knowing really the guest ranch operation until I got kind of hired to be at the Monta Vista guest ranch when I was 12 years old. I was a kiddie wrangler over at the Monta Vista ranch. And we had two Shetland ponies, and I had a smaller horse and an arena area, and I would take the smaller kids on the two Shetland ponies for anywhere from a 10-minute ride to a half-an-hour ride. And then as the kids developed better skills, I would take them out of the arena and on a little trail for maybe a half an hour while their parents went on a loping ride or a walking ride down through the Hacienda. And so I started early, had about a 40-year break, and then came back to the Flynee Ranch in 2004 to work with my wife.
Well, I'm going to stop you there. What a great summary. I wanted to ask you, go back in time a little bit. How did your father know about Wickenburg or choose Wickenburg as the place to come out and train horses?
There was a trail ride, like the Desert Caballeros that's here in Wickenburg, in Palm Springs. And people, basically, a real estate man, Bob White, Luke White, went on that ride, talked to my dad's boss. We worked for the man. The man was the owner of Solo Cup Company. And he, at that point, wanted to expand and was thinking about raising horses and raising polo ponies to do that more than playing. He was getting elderly, and at that time, so was my dad. And they talked him into a piece of property north of town. Mr. Halsman is his name, Leo J. Halsman, at that time was the owner of Solo Cup Company. He purchased the land. We built the house on the property and started raising horses.
Is that house still there?
The house is still there, yes.
So where is that from here, you think?
5 miles north of town is an irrigated pasture towards Prescott. If you remember kind of that area. And we sat back in about a mile back in from that area.
Okay. Do you remember what your first impression of Wickenburg was coming from Santa Barbara?
Where's the beach? We basically, during the time we were in California, had beach houses where we, in the front door, change your clothes, out the back door, maybe we're on the beach or two or three streets from the beach, on the beach, whenever we could. And I guess the one that was not the happiest was my mother, very upset that we moved to the desert. Again, I was probably not happy right away, but we grew to love it. You either love the desert or you hate it, and I love it now. So,
which schools did you go to?
There was more than a few in Carpinteria. Concha Loma was one that I went to. Catalina was another one that we would, you know, come back and forth to. And I went from kindergarten through third grade in Carpinteria.
Oh. And then when you came to Wickenburg, I guess there was just the one school.
Right. The elementary school here where the Bashes is, mm-hmm. That's where the school was, mm-hmm. Right next to the Garcia Little Red Schoolhouse.
Right. So. And did you go to the high school here in town?
Yeah, we went to the high school, the old high school again. It's now a Christian Academy.
Yeah, down there on Tegner, right?
Yeah, south of, towards Simpson's Barn, mm-hmm. Simpson's Raphael. That was the old high school at that time.
Uh-huh. Okay, well, we're going to switch gears. Now we're going to talk to Andy. So same question for you. Where were you born, brought up, school, all of that?
I was born in Grable, Wyoming. My folks had a ranch at that time. They raised both sheep and cattle. So we had not very good weather, and my dad was able to find a ranch in New Mexico. So at a young age, I think even less than a year old, we moved to a ranch outside of Raton, New Mexico. Lived there until 1958. When there were really bad spring blizzards. My dad lost quite a bit of his herd, which was registered Angus and registered Hereford cattle. So he said, I've had enough of this. He sold the ranch, moved to Scottsdale, bought an airplane, and started being a middleman commoditor for cattle sales. So I grew up in the ranching family. And from there, we bought an acreage outside of Morristown, which is east of Wickenburg, and we lived there until 1967. Grew up there, a little two-room schoolhouse, and when I graduated eighth grade, I had to come to town to high school, so I moved to Wickenburg at that point in time. My mom and I were out on the ranch by ourselves. My folks separated and divorced. when I was 8. So it was pretty much my mom and I. I was like Steve. I don't remember the first time I was on a horse, but I do know that my dad had promised me a horse when I was 4. And so he was bred for the track, for the racetrack. My dad was also into racehorses, and my granddad. And not knowing, my brother got the first foal. So I cried, and I said, well, can I have a horse? And Dad said, you can have the next horse that's born. And so this horse was born, this little colt. And my dad said, no, I'm sorry, you can't have this one because we're going to put him on the racetrack. And I remember my mother telling me the story, but Dad, you promised I could have this horse. And so my mom went to him, and she said, you know, you promised that little girl, and a promise is a promise. So I got the horse, and that was pretty much it, because from there, I started on a little Shetland pony, but as we had these horses trained as 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds, that's the horse that they put me on. So I went into the Wickenburg Saddle Club, and that's how I got acquainted with Wendy Wellake, who was also part of the Saddle Club. And my first studio was here at the Flying E Ranch in 1962. So I was raised with a Western background. My mother was a school teacher in Wickenburg, and in 1967 we sold our ranch and were able to move to town. So I attended Wickenburg High School, met and fell in love with Steve my sophomore year in high school, and so that's how my history of the Flying E Ranch came about. Wendy and I were good friends. When I came to Wickenburg to high school, I didn't know anyone because there were only 5 of us who graduated from from Morristown grade school. So out of the 5, 3 of us went on to high school, and 2 of them were boys. So, of course, they didn't want to hang out with me. And that would be kind of strange, hang out with a girl in high school. So Wendy and I hooked up and started going to lunch together. And meanwhile, she would come spend the night with me. I would come out to the ranch and spend the night with her. So that was my first introduction to the Flying E Ranch as a friend of Wendy's. And, of course, knew by and was very close to her. So after we got married, we had toured around the world, but his first assignment obviously was a remote tour, and Vi had seen me at the post office. I had come home to live with my, or to see my mom, not really knowing where I was going to go or what I was going to do. Vi asked me at that point in time what I was doing home, and I said, well, Steve got shipped out to Vietnam, so I'm here trying to decide what I want to do. She said, I have a server position at the ranch. Would you like to come to work for me? And I said, sure. So I worked here for a season, and that would have been 1972-73, and saw just exactly how Vi ran the ranch. And so 30 years later, here I am actually managing, which is just an ironic, amazing ride for me.
Wow, that's wonderful. Oh, I'd like to talk a bit about Vi and the beginnings of the Flying E Ranch, and you, the two of you know that best. Okay, Steve is pointing to Andy. Just tell me a little bit about Vi and George, how they, you know, found the place, and a little bit about their personalities.
Vi and George came from Bellflower, California, and Vi had met George at a hotel. There was some kind of function, and I think that's the story. Anyway, they got married in Bellflower, and for some reason, they were on their way to Bandera, Texas, to the Flying W Ranch. And again, this is the story that's been told down through the years, and we hope it's true. But they flew over the Flying E Ranch. George was an aviator and had his own private plane. So they were on their way, and they stopped at the Camelback Inn in Phoenix and spent the night. And they were really intrigued with the Flying E when they flew over. And so they said heads, they would flip a coin. Heads, they would go on to Bandera, Texas, because they had reservations at that ranch. Or tails, they would come back and land at the Flying E and just see what it was all about. They flipped the coin. It was tails, and that was the life they lived. They came back, fell in love with the ranch. The owners were from Oregon, Eugene, Oregon. Lee Ierley owned the ranch, and he had a management team, which was Vic and Leta Kelly. So they talked them into investing some money into the ranch, which they did. They expanded some of the rooms. It used to be just 8 rooms and the lodge. George and Vi invested money to build the swimming pool, build the additional five rooms. And in 1952, they sold it outright to the Wellick family, and Vi and George took on the responsibility of owners. Vic and Leta stayed on for a while and managed for them. And I believe in the early 60s, 1960-ish, they moved to Wickenburg. But Vi and George still had his businesses in Bellflower, which was land development, and he also owned a tire company that was there. And as far as I know, he continued to do his business in California. And this was their life here. In 1962, they built a home on the ranch, and that was their permanent residency up until Vi's death in 2004. George had passed away in 1983.
Now, they had no background at all in hospitality or anything
none
like
whatsoever.
That?
None
how,
whatsoever.
How, what did she ever tell you what it was like for them to start so from scratch?
I don't think she ever really talked about it, but I think that just the feeling that they get when they arrived at the ranch, and we feel this too, a lot of people find that it's a tranquil, peaceful paradise, and I'm almost sure that that's what they felt when they landed here. Plus the fact that the Ierleys, he was into aviation invention. Mr. Ierley invented the first amusement rides that went in to the United States. So he also, from some research that I've been doing in the last couple of years, he also drew up plans and invented different plane parts and things of that nature. So George bonded to him right away, I'm sure. But no idea whatsoever. And even Wendy had mentioned that when I had mentioned that I'd been offered this job. And I said, Wendy, I have no background. I have no experience in the hospitality industry. My background's in physical education and education. And she said, well, Andy, I'm sure Mom and Dad didn't know anything about running a dude ranch when they arrived either. So, no, I think he was obviously a well experienced and knowledgeable businessman, and I guess that was it.
Well, they probably reflected on their own experience when they stayed here and realized that if they felt that good, if they would give their own guests that kind of experience, then they would be successful.
I think that's a beautiful synopsis. I really feel that when you come, I mean, it's just so beautiful and just the home feeling that you get when you walk into the lodge, and that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. They were lucky, too, to feel that it was their house, their home. You were coming here. You weren't, per se, coming to a paid vacation dude ranch. You were coming to George and Vi's ranch. You had a feeling that you were a small group of friends, not paying customers. You were a friend. You weren't, per se, a customer to come here.
Exactly. A lot of people have been sort of doing research on Dude Ranch history lately that I've been reading, and the most successful ones, that's exactly what they do. And especially if there is a woman who is, you know, the one who interacts most with the guests and acts more like, you know, a hostess or, you know, your friend's mom or something like that, that it very often it's that sense that, the you know, you're coming to this woman's house and there's the sense of welcoming. And it's often when there's a very strong woman, you know, at the helm.
That's interesting because we do. That's what we say in our literature when we talk to people on the phone. We say it's like coming to grandma's house. Mm-hmm. You know, the cookie jar is always full, the coffee pot's on, you've got a nice bed to lay your head at night. And so this is it. I think it is It is family.
So tell me about the first year or two when you guys were in charge here. What kind of challenges did you face and overcome? Or did you have any?
No, we did. I still say the quote of the first year basically was from my general manager wife comment, "But honey, you like to cook. You enjoy cooking for people." I said, "Yes, I enjoy cooking for four, not 44. We basically, including the general manager, had 8 different cooks cooking in the kitchen our first year. We went through the growing pains very quickly due to whatever situation came up. And for 3 days, I was the only cook, and we had 44 people in-house. And we cussed, cried, kicked, and did everything else, but we got through it. We literally had a feeling of we've been through a lot of stuff, a lot of tough stuff. This isn't going to beat us. And again, we didn't have that paying customer hounding us. We had guests coming into the kitchen. "Can I help? What can I do to help you out?" And I had a man. What was his nickname that ran Happy Hour? You remember?
I don't remember.
But he knew I was cooking. I was usually hosting Happy Hour, which is, as far as I'm concerned, the best time of the whole day at the ranch. But he said, "Steve, I'll take care of happy hour. You, whatever you need to do here, you do it, and I'll take care of the guest. And here's a guest taking care of other guests," meaning being a hostess for happy hour, greeting people, making sure there was ice, making sure we had mixers, making sure. But we had people that helped out as much as anything else, so. And that was our biggest thing for the first year. Now, we have grown since then, learning this and that, doing some things.
It was a tough year because filling Vi's shoes are giant shoes. They're even bigger than Ronald McDonald's shoes. But the guests had such a family orientation. And I think our saving grace was that I had worked for Vi, so I knew what her standards were. I also had a little bit of knowledge in everywhere except the kitchen. But I think that was the biggest obstacle, was letting people know that I wasn't just here as a new manager. I was here of what I felt a family member. The love that I had for the Wellick family was what kept me here, because there was a lot of animosity. There was a lot of, "Well, Vi would have never done that, and that's not what..." And Vi had had a management team in place for several years prior to my coming. So I think that was the hardest thing. But once they understood that we knew the family, that we knew the area, that we knew the ranch, we then became part of their family. And I think that was huge. My philosophy in life, if you have taught kindergarten, been a military wife, and lived on a ranch, you can tackle almost anything in your life. But, it wasn't easy, but I think the fortification was the love that I knew Vi had for this ranch. Vi worked very hard to succeed and make her guests comfortable. So knowing what she did and how she filled her shoes was a huge emphasis on giving me a backbone to carry on. And now we have also grown to love our guests as family members. You know, they're not just guests. They're people that we look forward to, and we've watched kids grow from kindergarten through college, which is just an amazing thing. And this is what dude ranching in general is all about. It's not about spending 2 nights in a hotel room and going down a water slide. It's about forming relationships. And I think that's what is the most wonderful thing about this ranch, is that we have kept that family orientation. Or that's what we've tried to keep anyway, and hopefully we're successful at that.
Yeah. Tell me more about Vi's other work around Wickenburg, her philanthropic work, and how that got started.
George was a very, both George and Vi were very giving people. George donated things to this community that he wanted to be known anonymously. He did not want people to know that he donated land for the school. Wellick Field was a little bit different. George, his first and foremost love was Vi, obviously. His second love was aircraft. And he wanted to make sure that the town had an airport. He wanted to find something that was industrial sound, that people could come to Wickenburg and get jobs, because as most people know, Wickenburg is a winter destination. So it's hard for a family to come and establish businesses in the community. So George was very adamant about doing that. Many things. Winds of Grace needed a horse. Vi would say, here's a check, go buy your horse. The CAP office needed a van to transport people.
What's CAP?
It's the senior citizen community. They are assistance program for seniors and people who have physical ailments. And the reason that she got involved was dialysis, kidney dialysis. Vi was having to be transported for 2 or 3 years of her life for kidney dialysis in Wickenburg, or excuse me, in Phoenix. So she donated a van because she knew how hard it was to do transportation. The giving goes on and on. The Chamber of Commerce, when they wanted to redo the train depot. And, I mean, these are just a few things that I know about. But I do know that George wanted to be anonymous. He wanted to help the community, but he didn't want anything back in return. He didn't want his name up in lights. Now, Wellick Field was another thing, and I think they named it Wellick Field probably after he passed away. But I think that he was a very proud man, and he enjoyed doing things for other people, but he didn't want to be in the lamplight for any reason. He wanted to be behind the curtain, Mr. Wizard. And Vi was the same. Vi was very giving, but there were so many things that she donated through George that the community wanted to make sure that she was acknowledged for. I don't know if that answers that question.
Yes, it does.
And, yeah, it's just amazing. And many people in Wickenburg are very giving, but because they were established here in the 40s, you know, that, I think, makes time go back a long way.
Yeah. There's this really famous photograph of Vi in her sparkly, nudie outfit on the horse at the Rose Bowl. Would you tell me about that photo?
That photo...
that event.
That event is really interesting. The gentleman who took that photo, to the best of my knowledge, was Brian Hochmeyer, and they had a photography studio in the Pasadena area. That family was oriented by a family out of Switzerland, the Hochmeyers. They are Kristen and Clive. They frequented the ranch for many, many years. So the fact that Brian took that picture was really more special to me. And I remember when Vi was in there, because Steve and I were in high school, and I remember Vi getting to go to the Rose Bowl, which, to my knowledge, is invitation only. She knew somebody in California. She bought the horse. She bought the silver saddle. She went to Nudie and said, make me an outfit with Flyne on it. I mean, just the belle of the ball. Vi was always wanting to, she was the belle of the ball. She enjoyed the fact that she could bring notoriety to Wickenburg, Arizona by riding in the Rose Bowl Parade. And then the following year, her daughter Wendy was Miss Gold Nugget, which was our town queen, and she also rode in the Rose Bowl.
Oh, I didn't know
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so she Cherry Berry was quite the horse, and I don't know whatever happened to that horse, but she didn't keep him very long, and it was strictly for that parade. She bought the horse, the saddle, the outfit, and said, "Here I go." You know, so that was really a fun story, and I'm very, very proud to know that the museum has taken that whole outfit and that whole experience and made it part of the Quail Gallery, which I know you had a big part in instigating, so which our guests from all over the world go, and they love that gallery. They love the fact that the dude ranching, you know, the dude ranch capital of the world, that the museum now has a wonderful showcase, and it's beautifully done. And the fact that, woohoo, yep, that was mine, that was my outfit. I tried it on once, but it was too long, and I was too chubby, so it wouldn't work for me, but it definitely worked for Vi.
Well, she looked like $1 million in that outfit.
Yes, yeah. Wouldn't it be fun to know what she paid for that, too?
Yes, it would.
Yeah.
But it was a pretty penny even back then.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, you have a number of traditions for guests here at the Flying Eed. Tell me about them.
What's the number one tradition?
Getting branded.
Talk about that.
We have found the first branding about 1960 by our world-famous cowboy, Everett Bowman. And we think branding his own son, relative or a young boy to be 10, 12 years old. We seem to think the first recorded picture in our books. Mm-hmm. Don't know if he started it, heard about it, or whatever, but we continue today. A brand shows ownership. We brand mostly our animals, and we usually brand our guest with a whitewash paint to show ownership, that you are owned and accepted by the Flying E Ranch now. And we do a hot brand now, too, a smaller brand that we brand leather boots, anything leather, wallets, belts.
Hats
keys,
sometimes.
Hats, yeah. Anything that you want to try, we will brand that, too. And of anything else in the small world, we've had guests walking down JFK and somebody sees a branded pair of pants and come up and say they don't know each other, but they have brands together. We've had sons and daughters send pants to be branded, and those pair of pants are put in a box, gift wrapped, and then given to other members of the family, showing they're given a surprise visit to the Flying E Ranch or a return visit. That's probably our most significant tradition. What else do we do?
Well, and when Vi passed away, or when Vi knew she wasn't going to live forever, Vi wrote down some rules and regulations, and I have those in my office. But the one thing that she really, really, really wanted for this ranch particularly, and whether as time moves on we'll be able to hold on to her wishes, is yet to be seen. But number one, she wanted the dinner cookouts. She wanted the people to experience out in the West and the campfires. She wanted the breakfast rides. She wanted a lodge to have family-style meals at dinner time. She wanted it to be for her guests. She wanted every guest to have a good horse. So we maintain a herd of over 50 horses. She wanted the best Western experience that you could have. But traditionally, I think the branding is number one. The cookie jar is a huge tradition. The dining room family sit-down meal, she really wanted families and guests to eat as a family. She didn't want separate tables, you know, for two or four people. And just the Western riding, she wanted to make sure that the trails were still maintained. And we encompass almost 20,000 acres from state, privately owned, and BLM land. She wanted that atmosphere for the people as well. So that's pretty much the handful of traditions that she's asked us to. And we've tried and true. I have a fabulous staff who helps me maintain those. Our cattle foreman has been here for 32 years. Our ranch hand has been here for almost 22 years. Our head wrangler has been here for 27 seasons. You know, so I have a lot of help. Our head housekeeper's been here for over 20 years. So we've been able to maintain that tradition because they knew Vi, they worked for Vi, which has helped me tremendously.
That longevity of your staff says a lot. That says a lot about how good you are at doing your jobs. And I would venture to say that, yes, you've maintained Vi's traditions, but you've also created some of your own. I mean, the Steve and Andy version of the Flying E, and that speaks to the loyalty that they have for you. And I think that says a lot.
Well, we do a few little things a little bit different with modern technology. And, of course, we still have the square dances in the barn. The top of the barn is a big icon for the ranch. I've created a picnic ride. If we just have a few people, we'll ride out and just have a picnic lunch in a paper sack. And just little things like that. But, yeah, we've tried to maintain and just maybe step up a little bit through modern technology and what people, you know. The all-day rides are slowly going away because people don't want to sit in the saddle for 6 and 8 hours. They'd like to sit in the saddle, get off, stretch their legs, get back in the saddle. So that picnic ride works good for that sort of thing. But, yeah.
That's great. Another thing we did with the staff, and we pretty much continue, and we get it from our own staff. Every staff member here gets their own room. Big, big plus. You're here for 6 months to 6.5 to 7 months as a staff member. And many of these summer ranches, you're either with young college kids or you're bunked 2 to 3 to a room. And that's one thing with us. Due to finding who works the best, we're finding older people that work the best, have more courtesy to everybody else. And that's another thing that we attribute to Vi. She was a big one for building and maintaining good staff quarters, a saying or an attitude of, all she had to do was take care of her staff, and her staff would take care of the guest. Mm-hmm. We all do that. As you walk around the ranch, you see a piece of paper, it gets picked up. You see something on the ground shouldn't be there, it gets taken care of. We believe in living in the desert, but the desert doesn't come to your room. We got a little more sidewalk, a little more pavement, a little more cleaning area so that you're not dragging the desert into your room. You know, we're not rustic, we're not dusty desert like that, you know, which helps a lot too. People are amazed of how this place looks, but we maintain it. We work at it every day to keep it looking just pristine. Another comment is our advertising. We should advertise more, stronger, show what we've got. And Andy and I both believe in what our brochure says you can find. Many brochures you look at, and where did they take this picture? What day of the whole season was this one day taken? You can go to any of our rooms, and it says a picture of Vulture Peak, and you can see Vulture Peak. You can go to another spot, and it says a picture overlooking the Corrals, and you can see what we advertise. And we're very, very big on honesty like that, representing what we tell you we're going to give you, we give you. Do cookouts. Do whatever is going to be a barn dance. So, but that's just a Western tradition, and it's also very big with Vi. You know, and even our young people that come here after about 2 or 3 days, they know what Vi means. It's not so much a person comment, it's a rule. You hear Vi, oh, it's time to go do something. You know, they understand that was quality.
Oh, that's really interesting. Her spirit is still here.
I think so.
You know, and I don't really, you live day by day by what you do, but I still feel that as we sit here and talk, how many times has why come up? And I think that is the hard thing within new technology, what new destination places mean. And, you know, this worked for 65 years. And so to try to change it, we get a lot of feedback. Please don't change this. Please don't change that. And generations, four generations of people coming. And I think until you sit back and listen to yourself talk, you don't realize how many times bi comes into the conversation. And so for us, I think that's part of the generational family-run owned businesses. That means a lot to us to maintain what she wanted, because she was an amazing woman, and George was an amazing man. He loved her very, very much, because there were many times that he would just say, "We're going to sell this ranch," and she says, "No, we're not." And he goes, "Okay, we're not." But he was many times I can remember as I worked here in the early 70s, and people say, "Oh, this ranch is beautiful," and he said, "If you got a dollar, I'll sell it to you," but because it's a lot of work. You know, it's constantly maintained, and it's a lot of work, but it's a work of love, I think.
Mm-hmm. Now, in addition to just, you know, individual guests and families, you have groups and events that happen here. Can you talk about some of those?
We are, and this is a thing now that's really becoming quite popular as groups. I run three Cowgirl Weekends a year. This year, they were all booked completely, and we have the traditional Thanksgiving, of course. We have the traditional Christmas. We have a traditional New Year's. New Year's Eve, we do a costume casino night, which people, when they leave, they're already thinking what costume they're going to wear next year. But that's really fun. We are seeing more and more family reunions. And I just had a big family reunion with we had 24 of one family for Christmas, which was wonderful. And their whole expression when they left, they said, "Andy, this is the first time we've ever been together, all of us. It may be the last, but it's been so special. Mom didn't have to worry about what to cook or linens." I mean, how do you get linens for 24 people? You know, you got to change sheets and all of this. The other thing that we had, which was a really great remark, I hosted another big family in February. One thing that they remarked about was you have three choices if you have a family reunion. You can go on a cruise, you can go to Club Med, or you can go to a dude ranch, because all your food and everything is right there. And all of his family were like, "Yeah, the dude ranch is the key." So, and I think dude ranching in general, weddings, we hosted our first wedding this year. We had done two weddings privately for our daughter and Vi's granddaughter, and we said, never will we do a wedding again. But with a little bit of tradition and having done one, you just fall into the other one. Weddings, I think, would be a wonderful addition, and to hire on a wedding planner, because that's a whole other thing. But, yeah, so the wedding turned out fine. It was in January. It was on the patio. We bought a new heater, and everybody was fine. But so many destination weddings are happening today. So that might be a new avenue that we're rushing into.
Tell me about Cowgirl Weekends. What do you do for that?
Cowgirl Weekends. The Wranglers love them. we have a group of ladies that love no matter what you do. It's a bonding session with ladies that we are very, fortunate with. Breakfast rides. We did a mystery dinner this year. Ladies that come once a year to just be together, and that's wonderful. Not much else to say other than it's all cowgirls.
Yeah. Now, do you have artists? I think you have had artist events here.
We had done an art residency through the Del Webb Center. Mm-hmm. Director Kathy Weiss had initiated that for the philanthropic aspect of the foundation. Met amazing people, ballet groups, dance group, theatrical groups from New York, Seattle, Portland,
Pittsburgh.
But it's more, and what they do, they come and create a piece here. We have found that it works much better if we can block off a time for them because they're on a schedule to work, where guests are on a schedule to enjoy and vacation. Beautiful people, beautiful idea. It's just coordinating because it doesn't work well if you mix it with a guest population. And so, again, that's on a tier that is between the foundation and the Del Webb Center. That's Steve and I don't really have much to do with that. We obviously take care of the people and facilitate what their needs are. But as far as scheduling and maintaining that, that is not part of what we do here at the ranch. That's strictly through the Del Webb Center and our foundation.
Okay. What is the furthest place that anybody has ever come to the Flying E, geographically?
Italy, Switzerland, UK. Wow. We have people from New York to Seattle. So geographically, it would be an overseas, Australia probably, because that's the longest flight.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Australia would be the farthest.
Wow. More than two or three every year, you know, something like that. Back on the activities, we have the Gold Rush Days. And you come here as a guest thinking you're going to lay around and do nothing, and we make you dress up in whatever the theme for the Gold Rush Days is, put you on a float, and drag you through the middle of town. And the first 100 feet, the people are just, they're not scared, but they're not really into the whole situation. And by halfway through, our guests are waving, stomping their feet, pointing at people, laughing, cheering. And it's amazing how our guests, again, take the situation, and they love it. They come back, oh, Andy, I don't know if I could do this. They come back, sign me up. I'm coming next year. The kids, I've got a little 8-year-old kid that doesn't want to do anything. Do you see him on the float? He's yelling, screaming, jumping, waving. Amazing that the guests that we have in a, you know, a celebration time of Gold Rush Days anyway, they love it. Just can't get enough of it. So
great. And you know that sign me up? That's actually, it's kind of like we have the slogan that we say, saddle up. And but now it's sign me up, and you're talking about the Cowgirl Weekend. I mean, they're getting so, as soon as they walk in the door to sign in at first welcoming, they're like, am I signed up for next year? And then they want their friends. And I think that's the contagious thing that we love about the ranch is just as you walk in, you want to make sure you're on the list for next year.
Wow.
Yeah, so about your pins you're starting.
Oh, and then we give pins in recognition of the number of days that your number of visits that you have to the ranch. So they're just little cheap pin-on pins, and they're like, well, I got a, one lady is really, really working hard towards her 50. She just got 48 this year, so she's trying to figure out how many times she can hurry up and come, but yeah.
They wear them like badges of honor.
Wow.
They don't fight with each other, but they sure let each other know how many visits they have versus there. And Andy usually has your welcoming part at dinner your first night. You have to stand up, who you are, where you're from, how many visits, how you found the ranch, something like that. So she always, probably not thinking about it, she starts with somebody that's got 20, 30, 40 visits. So the poor person that's got their first time, their last or something, they stand up and they look around, and you're looking at 100 visits, and you've got, this is my first visit. So, but they love it. They'll tell you then, I'm going for as many as I can go. I'll get my pen just along with you. And it is a corny little pin, and it's a badge of honor.
I love it. When you have people from international locations, is there a sense that they look on this experience differently than the Americans do, even ones from New York?
The biggest thing we get with the people from England, a lot of them, they grew up with the American Westerns when they were kids. Now they have the financial money, whatever, to come and actually participate in some of that. And the only thing you can participate in that anymore is a dude ranch. There's no Western Disney World. There's no Western Lego World. There's nothing Western that you can go do other than come to a dude ranch. So many of them are very, they've got that childhood memory of watching whatever program they watch. Now they think they're going to come over and do that. And it's a big dream come true to many of them. Many of them may, you know, something that they've thought about for years. And now they come over and they finally get to experience it. And some of them are nuts. They just eat it up. They're downtown buying cowboy hats. I have found out that your Western vest is not a Western vest. It is a waistcoat in English. So they bring their fancy waistcoats. And I wear my vest at happy hour. We discuss that too. So
that's amazing. What about non-English speaking countries? It seems to me the American Western is sort of universal in a way. I mean, I would imagine even in when I've been in Italy, I've seen American reruns on television, and I wonder if does that translate? You know, what is it about the American West that brings people from places like Italy or Germany?
I think this society right now is on an adventure. You know, the number of dude ranches in our sector, our organization, that have put in zip lines, rock climbing walls. Everybody's on an adventure. And what we find here at the Flying E is everyone says, this ranch has forced me to relax. This has been the best vacation I've ever had. You go out on a horse and you watch where he goes, but it's not like a bicycle. You don't have to watch where you're going if you're climbing or walking. And one gentleman said, I can look all around me. And, you know, I'm in control of my horse, but I can look around. And even when I'm hiking, I have to watch where I'm walking. It is so relaxing. You know, it's not like I'm sitting in a car or a tour bus or anything. And just the landscaping is so relaxing. So I think the people that are on that adventure tour, once they get here, they realize we worry about a language barrier sometimes, and most of our European travelers do speak English, at least some, but you also, it's different if you go into a restaurant and point to something on a menu, but when you're on the back of a horse and a wrangler says, please don't get ahead of the wrangler, or please keep your horse on the trail, or, you know, how to stop your horse, or something like that. So we really key in a lot of instruction before we get on horses and give a little orientation. But I think that people today are just on this big adventure kick, and they've got to see how much they can get into. Grand Canyon, Sedona, I want to do a dude ranch, and you have a 5-day trip. You know, how can I get all this in? And I think that when people do come and they step back and they think, ah, this is what a vacation is. I'm so rested. I feel at peace. So that's another thing that I think is a key thing that people don't understand. You can write that down, but they're like, well, why do I want to go there? You know, I'm on vacation. I want to, you know, hang glide. You know, I want to jump from an airplane or whatever, but hot air balloon rides and all of this stuff. But when they get here and they say, you know, just that riding was perfect.
Yeah. There are a couple of other famous Flying E things I want to ask you about. One is the barn, and the other is the wagon that is on display at the museum downtown. Tell me about those.
Well, I'll tell you about the barn, because I know more about that, and you can talk more about the stagecoach and the history. Will that work?
Well, the stagecoach, you know, again, who knows how they first got it, but they actually would go down with the team of horses, take it down to the Chamber of Commerce, take it down to the train station, At the train station, they would pick you up as a guest and bring you out here to the ranch. As a chamber of commerce, they would pick you up, maybe tour you around, bring you back out to the ranch. The other thing they would do would take it, they would load up Wendy and Warren and a few other kids and take them to school and drop them off. And again, probably some of it wasn't daily, maybe special occasions, but again, Vi had such a great feeling of the West. This would be a great thing to do, you know. And it may have been special people. We don't know exactly. You made reservations. In those days, the train would be one way to get here. Like we say, we're the Flying E. I have pictures of the of our airstrip with 20 planes around it. They had fly-ins. They had that many people. We had we as the ranch had a stretch limo station wagon with three or four doors on, you know, each side to pick you up. You only went about a third of a mile, but up the hill, they'd bring you up that way. So it was all part of bringing people to the ranch. The stagecoach kind of went into disarray, was stored down at the Wellick Field at the airport for many years. And then Vi, with a friend of ours in town, Carson Thomas, got together and wanted to get it restored. And story goes that he was almost in over his head. It was quite a project. Again, Vi, no money is no object. I want it done first class. Got it done first class, and then due to maybe some of the people at the museum, finally got it to where it needs to be, and that's where it is right now. And we tell people when we send them to the museum, first thing you're going to see is that stagecoach, and it's got a Flying E brand on it. Wow. So another thing, too, if Del Webb would have put that stagecoach there, you would have seen three signs that say Del Webb. There's no sign on there that says Wellick. It has a little brand that says Flying E. Subtle. This is it. That's the way they did things.
It's true. The barn was constructed by the Ierley family, and it's the shape of an Oregon barn, which has the concave roof, so snow would melt off. Of course, no, we don't need that really here, but it has always been an icon, and I've tried really hard to use it in all of my advertising because that really meant a lot to Vi. The top, it was used to store hay originally, and then they decided that that would be the perfect spot to have square dances. And we have old pictures that were probably maybe 50 people up there. In the early days of dude ranching, when Steve and I were going to high school, there were 7 dude ranches in the town. And even the year I worked here, we had square dances at Rancho de los Caballeros in one of their main ballrooms. We had square dances at Remuda Ranch on their tennis courts. But when you came to the Flying E Ranch, you had square dances in the barn. And at that point in time, those ranches were small enough that we could get all the ranches involved. Now today, of course, Rancho de los Caballeros has, I think, over 60 rooms. And, of course, us and the Flying E and Rancho de los Caballeros were the only ones in town. But years ago, that was the thing to do, especially on holidays, Easter, Christmas, Thanksgiving. That was always, you came to the Flying E for a square dance. So the whole top of the barn is a wooden dance floor, and it looks like Noah's Ark turned upside down. It's all wood. It's beautiful. We have a crew party. Everybody is involved in the barn in cleaning and oiling the top of the barn when we first open in October. But it is a beautiful icon, and they've just maintained it. And it was built in 1946.
I still see old postcards featuring the barn,
yes.
You know, in antique stores.
Do you?
I do, yeah.
Well, it's the icon. I mean, I think Flying E is one thing. The airstrip was huge because that was here for so many years. But I just think that that barn is so unique in Arizona. It's just really a unique thing. Plus, getting up and down the stairs is unique.
of course, Everett Bowman who's very famous here and throughout the... Oh, look at that photo. Oh, my gosh, it's beautiful.
That's what it looks like after we cleaned it.
Wow. Oh, it's just so shiny. I need my sunglasses. That's beautiful. Anybody who knows anything about rodeo and cowboys knows the name Everett Bowman. And, of course, he was the wrangler here for years. But that was before you guys were still in high school.
We were in high school. In fact, Everett Bowman taught Wendy how to ride. She always says, yeah, Everett told me how to ride. Wow. But Everett Bowman was here, to the best of our knowledge, 1954 to 1959, I believe. I don't. Maybe he went into the 60s. We don't know in the 60s. He and Vi had a very special relationship. She was very fond of him, and he did a lot. Because, again, Vi and George came from California. She knew nothing about horses. She knew nothing about trail riding and that sort. So Everett, who was a very humble man and was one of the best cowboys in the world, obviously, and he really took the riding program under his hat and helped Vi establish that. So that being said, when Everett passed away, Vi commissioned a bust to be placed in front of Town Hall in Wickenburg. That was Vi's doing, and I don't know if a lot of people know that.
I didn't know that.
Here on the ranch, we have a large mountain that we, well, it, if you're in Montana, it's a hill. If you're in Arizona, it's a mountain. But it is a location where we have a trail that rides up, and the legend is that every time Everett took a ride up there, every guest would get off their horse and put a rock on this rock pile. So today, the rock pile, you've also done that. So today, the rock pile is huge, and we pretty much, the wrangler will get off and put the rock on for you. But it's just a wonderful tradition. So that's Mount Everett is the name of the place. We have tried to maintain, and one thing that I have done during my stay here is there is a heritage center in Cody, Wyoming, and that is the Dude Ranch location where we have our National Dude Ranchers Museum. And our director there, Colleen Hodges, had asked me if I had a picture of the branding that we could put in. And we have an old trophy that was in the barn for years from the Phoenix JCs. And so I donated that particular trophy. I donated a pair of branded jeans. I donated a Dudio scarf with a flying E on it. And I also found a picture of Everett Bowman and Vi branding in one of our photo albums, so I donated that. So that would be, and also a copy of her picture of when she rode Cherry Berry in the Rose Bowl. So I feel that we have a wonderful legacy in that museum coming from the Flying E. But Everett Bowman was a huge source of information for Vi, and I think really helped her in establishing, well, the branding. And
Dutch oven cooking.
The Dutch oven cooking was huge.
Just everything.
Yeah, because he was quite the cowboy. Plus, he was an aviator, which that was fine with George. Because now they had a passion that they could share.
Yeah. I'd forgotten that he was here that early in the 50s. He died in a plane crash, didn't he?
He did die in a plane crash.
And so that's for the 70s. That's what I was
72,
thinking.
73,
that's what
something
I thought,
like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
When I was gone, I think, yeah.
Because you hear his name if you read about the history of the West. So, and certainly his name is in, as you know, the Levi Strauss & Company archives. Because
really?
Because the company had an all-electric mechanical rodeo at the 1939 World's Fair in San Francisco Bay. And they made these wooden puppets in the likeness of real cowboy stars. And one was Everett Bowman. And the archives has a photo of him that they used to make the puppet. And a copy of that was in the Quail Gallery exhibit for a while, because there are Everett Bowman materials in the Quail Gallery exhibit, too.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, the history. And that's the iconic thing for me, is that all of this history in the Flying E is, you know, just molded from all different parts of the world. So that's fun.
And, you know, I just heard about, in another interview, the Bowman Barn.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about the Bowman Barn.
Woohoo! I can tell you about the Bowman Barn.
Yeah. That sounds good.
That was just thrown out of there. Well, in the rodeo days, I grew up, and obviously my brother and I were on the rodeo circuit for several years as Arizona Junior Rodeo Association. And every Saturday night, there was a rodeo dance. And, of course, that's where you fell in love with your cowboy or cowgirl. And we spent many Saturday nights at Bowman Barn dancing. And that was quite a highlight in Wickenburg for many, many years. On Saturday night, you would go out to Bowman's Barn, and you would dance, and just that was the meeting place. You know, you'd go down to the local bar now or whatever establishment. But Bowman's Barn was a big, big influence. And just cowboys and cowgirls who like to dance. And once in a great, great while, they would have a special meal there. But pretty much it was just a band would come in. And every Saturday night, you went to Bowman's Barn. Yeah.
You know Gillies, right?
Uh-huh.
It was Wickenburg's version of a small Gillies. So,
wow.
I mean, it was definitely the place to go, the... like, say, Saturday night, Friday night, whatever it was.
Wow.
And I think they tried to run it, as I'm trying to get the cobwebs back in my memories, they tried to run it after Everett passed away, but it just wasn't the same.
Yeah.
He had the tenacity to run it.
Tell them how the Dude Ranchers participated in your Bowman's Barn dance. Sunriders, didn't they... Well, when you went over there, the pictures we've got of you over there dancing when you were working out here at Bowman's Barn.
Oh, well, that was just a Saturday night affair.
That
wasn't anything special. It was just every Saturday night you went to Bowman's Barn. That's just what you did.
Yeah, I'm over defending the country. She's out there dancing at Bowman's Barn. See, so.
Now the truth comes out.
Yeah.
Well, Andy, tell me a little bit more about your rodeo years.
Oh, well, it was just something we did. Every weekend we would, even when my mom and dad were still together, it was Saturday morning, you'd get up and you'd load your horses at 4 a.m. And there was a circuit that we pretty much went through, and it was, if you start in January, you had the Phoenix Rodeo, then you had the Wickenburg Rodeo, you had the Scottsdale Rodeo, you had the Mesa Junior Rodeo, and then we also hit Benson and Tucson. We'd go to Sedona. But it was a circuit, just like they have today, only each weekend. And we usually went at least twice a month. We would go to a rodeo and participate. And it was my brother rode the bucking stock. I was on bucking stock and calf riding. I didn't ride barebacks at all, but my dad tied me on a couple steers. And when I was 12, my dad always said, now don't let go until the whistle blew. And one year the rope slipped, so I went under the cow, and I didn't let go until the whistle blew, so I ended up with a few broken parts of my body, and my mother finally said, that's it, no more bucking stock for Andrea. But you know, you learn, you're just too dumb not to be tough. But it was a wonderful experience, and we met a lot of kids from different places, Prescott and all over the state, and it was a fun competition. Like I said, you knew everybody, you competed against everybody, but they were your friends. And it was always, you know, if you ran the barrels in 18.6 that week, well, and she ran it in 18.2, well, your mission was to run it in 18 the next week. But wonderful opportunity. And I think that also was a very good base for me. You learned how to win with dignity. You learned how to lose with dignity. And I remember my dad trying to explain to me how quick tenth of a second was. You can't even click a stop. Well, today they don't have stopwatches that you click. But in those days, you had to click. And I know I got beaten by a tenth of a second one time, and my dad tried to sit down and tell me what a tenth of a second was. And he said, don't worry about that. But he also said, you can win by a tenth of a second, and you can lose by a tenth of a second. So it really, for me, established a lot of pride. Whether you win or lose, you carry, they call cowboy pride. So that was a really good lesson for me in life, and to know that your livestock, you depend on your livestock, and so you took good care of your livestock. We were, our horses, our dogs, our cats were always fed before we were. And, you know, you always groomed them and took care of them and vetted them. And so you had something that you had to care for from early on. And I think that's, our children really didn't have that. We were never in a position to where we could have animals. And I think that that is a wonderful base for any individual, that something is dependent on you for their existence. So that was really good. And, you know, it gave you the cowboy life, and be it good or bad, it's instilled in you.
That's wonderful. I just have just maybe a couple more questions. Tell me about how and where you advertise for your guests.
We advertise on social media is huge today. We have a strong presence on Facebook. The Twitter and the Instagram accounts are not as popular for us. We don't maintain them probably as much as we should. We advertise in both print and internet booking programs. We have we've done several co-ops with the DRA, Cowboy Magazine, Western Horseman. We are also working with our Chamber of Commerce to do co-ops in that respect. I think the biggest presence today that you can have is SEO work with your website and just getting that name out, because everybody has a mobile device today, and just the slightest little bit. We've tried some radio. We've done a couple commercial entities in Prescott, a couple of the resources that we have today are becoming, also we do a brochure, we send out brochures, we get interest from our Dude Ranchers Association websites. They come from the national level to the Arizona level to us. So we send out, we still are paper people. We still feel that if you have a brochure in your hand and you stick it in your desk drawer in 2014, you'll be cleaning out your drawer in 2016 and discover that, whoa, I was going to do that. Then you go to your mobile device. So we're still big people, paper people. I just think that that's important. And then word of mouth. I tell you, the biggest majority, we have over 65 return guest percentages here at our ranch, which is not unusual in the dude ranching industry. But we find that those people are telling their friends who tell their friends. And that, to me, is the most special, because your friends are going to be more like you, and we still build our families through that. Yeah. That's our biggest clientele base, I think, is you.
Well, we still have, we don't have the high-tech people. We still have people that drive in on a Sunday afternoon, walk in the office, and, what is this place? Do you have a brochure? Well, yes, we do. Here you go. I mean, you know, a lot of our people are still that old, established, feel something in hand, want to see it rather than look on the internet and see it. They want to walk around and see it. And it's amazing how many people we get that just come up on a Sunday, look around, and honestly, I'll be back. And more than 50-50, they're back.
Wow.
Just for that little... And then we'll take them on a little tour. How many people would take the time? Oh, sure, come on. We'll take you through the lodge. Take you, show you room, show you the pool, show you the barn, walk around, and they're amazed. And off they come back. So a lot of word-of-mouth advertising is still the good old best way.
That's amazing. Do you know, I know through, you're very involved, are you still the president of the Dude Ranchers Association?
I handed over my gavel last September.
Oh, my goodness.
To a very, very, very capable lady at the Hideout Ranch. But, yeah, I actually was honored to serve as the Arizona Dude Ranchers Association president for over 3 years. Wow. And wonderful organization, wonderful camaraderie, and I really found, I learned my most about marketing and advertising by being at the helm. Yeah, that really helped. And working on retreats with your fellow ranchers and going to other ranches and seeing how they operate, and just being able to sit down at their bar or at their dinner table and just watch and see how their staff runs their organization. That was really a huge help to me. And like I said, the dude ranching industry is rare. I hope it will continue for years and years and years and years because it's so special that it's like no other vacation. Steve and I mentioned the same thing. We've traveled all over the world, as many of our guests have traveled, and never have we ever experienced what we've experienced at a dude ranch. Mm-hmm. You meet people, you're emailing their kids, you know, their friends on Facebook, and it's just a wonderful opportunity for a family. So my realm there, I was very proud to serve there, and I learned a lot. And I think we made the organization a little bit stronger. We've added 3 new ranches through the organization, and it's. I think people are starting to get it. I'm hoping we're going to backfold. Mm-hmm. And start opening more and more of these because there's only so much Disneyland that you can see and so much cruise that you can see. But a dude ranch, you know, to me is there forever.
Yeah. That was actually going to be one of my last questions, is are new ranches being opened still today?
We are quite surprised. It dropped off for a while, and I think everything in the economy state was really hard, mm-hmm. and we're rebuilding. But I'm absolutely amazed at the people who will come in and, like we had 2 lawyers, one from Palm Springs and one from Manhattan that bought a ranch outside of Durango. Our particular people have come, TI guy from New York who has purchased the Stagecoach Trails ranch out of Yucca. Another gentleman out of New York, again, they came in and bought the Grapevine Canyon Ranch, which had closed down. Which is in southern Arizona. We have a gentleman out of Paradise Valley who's opened a ranch outside of Payson.
Payson, yeah.
Outside of Young. They are joined. So, yeah, I'm very encouraged. We're seeing more and more people who want this lifestyle, although they don't realize the work that goes into being a dude ranch manager at the time. But and that's the thing. You're here for the lifestyle. You're definitely in it for the lifestyle.
Well, is there anything else that I've missed that you'd like to talk about? You've been very thorough.
No, I love your questions. I just think that we're excited that you're interviewing Dude Ranch people because it's a special breed. And once you hang your hat, you know you're a member of the family. And we just appreciate you taking the time to interview us because, as you can tell, we love the ranch.
Like they say, it does grow on you. Even our new people that come, we've gotten comments of, we don't ever do anything the same. They go to Disneyland, go to whatever, you know, the 2 cruises or whatever, and these people come back and come back. And they're amazing to themselves that they enjoy this that much once it gets in your blood. And then and we also will send them to the summertime, you know, with families. We've got people that come with their families. We got people that come with their girlfriends. And then we've got people, that same person that comes with just her husband. She comes 3 times a year.
Wow.
So they enjoy it. It's the same, but at the same time, depending on the guests that are here, it changes and becomes real nice that way. Mm-hmm. And with weather to help or hinder.
But the cookie jar is always in the same place, yes. And the iced tea and lemonade is always in the same place. And I think people, as much as they want change, they still rely and love what they know. You know, you want to go back to familiar things. And when you have to search for things that you're not familiar with, you get an uneasy feeling. But like I said, you know where this is, and you know what to expect when you come. And maybe there'll be different people, but... And that's why we've just really tried to keep things traditional so that people, that's why they come back.
I really believe that, especially if there's a lot going on, if there's economic turmoil or social turmoil, the kinds of comforting things, things that comfort people is what they're going to gravitate to. And I've always noticed that people tend to gravitate toward the great stories of the West. You know, in those times of sort of societal and economic turmoil, you know, you see the Western movies, they'll be really popular, then they'll go away. And when they come back, it's always when Americans, I think, want something to hold on to, want something traditional to hold on to. And that's what a dude ranch represents as well.
Especially, no, and we're fortunate here at the Flying E, which we really haven't mentioned that much, is that it's a working cattle ranch as well. And that was very, very important for Vi to know that she was a cattle rancher, because that's what you do in the West. You raise cattle. So we have a small cattle operation, but a lot of acreage because of it. And I think the fact that you can come out and see the calves on the ground and know, we don't make it a huge part of the guest ranch experience, but, you know, we do the team penning so people can work with cattle depending on the number of guests. But that's the other thing that people are intrigued with, that you're a cattle ranch as well as a guest ranch, which we have the opportunity to do because of our acreage. And a lot of the ranches don't run cattle, or a big, big cattle ranch anyway. So it's I think that's a thing that is also appealing to a lot of people.
If you don't mind taking a few more minutes, tell me more about that part of your operation. And then during the summer, how do things change for you in the summer?
Yeah, well, we run a cow-calf operation, which means that when we have calves, if they are steers, we usually sell them at a calf sale. If we have heifers, we keep them for a year to see if they're going to have calves. And then if they don't have calves, then we sell them. So that's why we call it a cow-calf operation. We maintain a steady herd of cows and bull population. Alan Culp has been our cattle foreman, as I said, for 32 years, and he and Ben Ruiz are pretty much involved in that. But going out gathering and branding and that sort of thing, which brings me back to my roots of how I grew up. Steve's not quite so excited that he's had to learn that. But he's done great, and so we do that. And then in the summer, we're pretty much the maintenance crew. Steve walks around with a paintbrush in his hand pretty much all summer. And that gives us a chance to close out our season, start marketing for our new season, close down the office. We are here full year, 4 full-time employees. But we shut down the guest operation, so that's when we take time to do our maintenance and regroup in the office. We're taking reservations year-round, obviously, but it gives us a chance to do our newsletter and reflect on what last season's numbers were and what we want to do to move forward for next season and make it more promotable and that sort of thing. But, there's really no downtime for us other than the fact that we do take a small vacation, and we are away from the guest operation. So the sad part of all that is we have to cook for ourselves. But it's pretty much maintenance and office procedures during the summer for us.
And what is your season?
We're open November 1st through April 30th.
But like you say, in the summer, our horses go away. Mm-hmm. You know, what we lease, they go back to Park City. Andy's continued to maintain horses going up to Friendly Pines in Prescott to a day kids camp kind of thing that Vi started in the 60s probably.
Well, they started, yeah, a long time ago.
Back and forth. So the horses still get used all year long. And then you're in competition with the northern ranches. You want to go to Montana, Wyoming, Colorado, Utah, Idaho, where it's cool in the morning and wonderful in the afternoon, or come to Arizona, and there are Arizona ranches that are open. If you want to ride in 110 degrees, you can do that. So to us, it's why we wouldn't do that. We wouldn't want to. Our staff can go, and they have gone from Baja, Maine, to Hawaii, to Alaska, to New Zealand. I mean, literally, a cook can cook at any of these places. Andy works with a website, Cool Works. Go on there, find you a summer job, semi-year, what do they call them?
Well, they're seasonal jobs. And that's the hard part of the industry, is finding employees on a seasonal workforce.
Yeah. Wow. Well, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. This has just been very easy to do, and you make us feel comfortable.
Oh, good.
So welcome to the ranch.
Thank you.
We did brand you, didn't we?
You did not.
We did not brand you. Well,
no, you didn't.
When you come back, we'll brand you.
Did I escape?